You are now listening to Out of the Blank.
Welcome to another episode of Out of the Blank podcast. He's back again, so you're now into the blank, and it has been about 2 years since we last talked, and a lot has changed. I'm wondering, are you still doing the same thing, or are we on to something different?
Yes. So thank you for having me on the show again. I really appreciate it. Always fun talking to you. So yes, I am still an astronomer. I am still at the observatory. And I've also recently started a position at one of the prominent universities here in South Africa, the University of Pretoria, where I teach astronomy to the first years.
Now, it's a little bit different than the first time you were on, only because before we couldn't do video, because last time you were at the observatory and you had to put your phone away and stuff like that. So trying to get, like, and plus the connection was a little bit bad at the time too. But it's a lot different now. But at the same time, like when you're teaching your students, for instance, or when, is there a lot of people interested in astronomy now that, like, I think this past year has just sparked an increase, but it seems to have died off a little bit because the UAP report, there's all these things. And I remember the first time we talked, you were like, I don't think there's aliens. I don't know if I necessarily believe that there are, but the curiosity that they're going to explain an unidentified flying phenomenon is kind of like, has piqued my interest a little bit.
Yeah, so that is actually quite interesting. So one of the last chapters I teach, or it's more of a discussion point I use for the students, is about extraterrestrial life. So that can be from intelligent life, like we see in sci-fi movies, or even microbes or living plants. It all depends on what the research tells us. But something interesting I can tell you about. So there was an astronomer, Frank Drake, a US astronomer. He was at the Green Bank Observatory in West Virginia. So something interesting, if you guys ever have a chance, please visit the Green Bank Observatory in West Virginia. It's the third largest telescope in the world, and it's the world's largest movable structure. It's taller than the Statue of Liberty, and it is bigger than a football field. So that is impressive. And Frank Drake, the observatory was started back in the 50s, and Frank Drake was there, and Frank Drake created an equation called the Drake equation. That is just a statistical equation where you have what is the chance that we have possible life multiplied by what is the chance that that life has informed intelligence multiplied by what a technology state is, multiplied by how far away they are. And there's a few other variables included, but then you get a statistical anomaly of could it be possible life. So if we look at this right now, currently, there should be life elsewhere in the universe. Yeah. They haven't discovered it yet or made contact with it, or perhaps they have, but there should be life somewhere else in the universe.
Well, I think for so long we were basing, like, what we base exoplanets off of is trying to find something that's inhabitable for our life. But we really never looked at the possibility that maybe what we would consider intelligence obviously is on the basis of what we would seem as intelligent. You know, like, we don't look at plants, for instance. A long time ago, there was plant perception. I think we talked about a little bit on the first time. That was considered a dumb experiment. It was considered done. Plants don't have emotions. Plants don't have feelings. But they're finding that there's another level of intelligence. There is still a study, I think, with at least 12 or is it 24 scientists that are studying with plants and working with them and trying to find out how they can communicate with each other through their root systems. And I look at it like, maybe there's not a biological life like us. There's probably maybe something a little bit different, or maybe there might be, you might have, you know, instead of having the beautiful hair you have, you might have an afro. I have no clue. But I think with this extraterrestrial life, it's probably something different. It might even be in the beginning stages of something, but I don't think they've came here. I start seeing all these, you know, flying, unidentified flying objects, everything that they talk about, propulsion systems. I'm like, man, that seems more of like a government military thing that they haven't released to us yet because we're not capable of holding it. I mean, when we last talked a little bit after is when the giant rise for Area 51 that people thought was just a myth happened. So it's just interesting because all this information that keeps like people say it doesn't exist and then it comes out. And I'm like, you're not leaving any room for people not to be conspiracy people when you talk about like you're slow trickling information, thinking that either we can't handle it or that, you know, you don't want us to know about it. And it's like, be honest with it. You might have a better result.
Yeah, that's very true. But one thing I also had a discussion with my students with, and I thought it really interesting. Say in the next day, we discover extraterrestrial life, intelligent life. What would that do to a human society? Will we accept it? And more importantly, what will that do to different religions?
Is it going to be worse than what's going on now? Because the people are just going to go crazy anyway.
Yeah, so that is the idea. So an example, take Christianity as an example. Christianity believe they are created in the image of God. So now we have aliens, perhaps, that looks totally different than we do. What will happen to Christianity then?
Yeah, you're going to have a lot. I mean, it's just interesting because the shift in religion, there's about 50-something percent of the population that just chooses not to believe in a religion or just choose to worship at home. It's kind of left the church. And I think it's needed, obviously, and especially in the beginning stages of civilizations. But where we're at now, there's so much about technology, other planets, you know. Before we thought we were the center of the solar system, and now we've learned that we're not even we're revolving around something else that's revolving around something else. And there actually might be more planets that used to be involved into our whole solar lineup, more than just Pluto not being a planet anymore. There's talking about that a couple million years ago or whatever, there was a planet that used to be involved into our little thing that ended up getting pushed out. I don't know if that's true. It's what I read. But at the same time, you start looking at it like we're always discovering something new. So to limit the possibility that we are the only thing on this planet or the only thing in this solar system, it just seems so small space where I'm like, I want to see that long game. I know. And like, hopefully it's not like Mars Attacks where they come down and they just want to light us on fire and stuff. But maybe people talk about they might be creators. What is your thoughts on that?
So that is really interesting. So I don't know if you're familiar with the Shardescape scale of civilization. So let me just bring it up, my notes on it.
Coming at me with notes. I'm glad.
So no, this is one of the notes I use for my students. So that I've opened let me just open it up.
I'm going to be 100% honest with you. You might have to talk to me like one of your students because I'm so curious and everything right now.
Okay. So where is it now? So it's just a interesting, where is it? It's just, it was a, where is it? I can't find my notes. But basically what the note says is, so yes, I got it. It's the Kardashev scale of civilizations. So it is just a scale that was created of to measure how far a civilization's technology has developed. And it was developed by the Soviet astronomer Nikolai Kardashev back in 1964. So there are three different types of civilizations that he classified. So a type one civilization is called a planetary civilization. So that civilization can use and store all the available energy on that planet. So that means fossil fuels, nuclear fuel, solar, wind. So they are comfortable on their own planet and they can use all the resources on their own planet. So currently we are a type one civilization. Then a type two civilization is a stellar civilization. So that means they can travel between different planets and they can control the energy of their own star. So I don't know if you heard the term in sci-fi movies of a Dyson sphere.
Yeah.
That is where you construct the structure around the star and you capture all the energy from the star. So a type two civilization will be interstellar. And then a type three civilization will be able to travel throughout the entire galaxy. So that means not our own solar system anymore, but can travel to different stars as well, and then use the energy of those stars as well. So currently we are a level or a type one civilization.
Now, what are they basing that off of? Like, where did they get evidence to be able to determine what to classify something as? Like, is that just on the classifying of seeing things in sci-fi movies, or is it just the possibilities? Like, I know we're discovering new dimensions as well, too, that there's a possibility that we can, because I know they had the particle accelerator that stretched like a mile and a half that they ended up shutting down because they thought they were going to create some black hole or something. But
at CERN, yes.
Yeah, but they're looking back into that to realize that there could be another dimension that we can go to. And I had talked to a guy who was explaining to me about, like, from here to wherever your destination is, it's going to be 5-10 miles. There's a way to cut that in half, just like a straight line. If you fold the paper, the line gets shorter, that we were able to discover something like that to be able to travel across space even faster. So instead of taking however long it takes to get to Mars, you can half that. Where I'm like, is someone turning on Star Trek or Star Wars? I mean, like, that's a cool idea, and they're trying to recreate it, or is this coming from like something different, like people having ideas of ways to travel and manipulate? Because you say we are a type one civilization, but when it comes to every single societal collapse or every restart of a civilization has boiled down to one topic, and that is always gender. And that's kind of where we're at now. The Spartans had the same thing where they talked about, like, they would tear each other apart on the concept of they didn't believe in a male or a female. They take down every ideology. It starts with religion and it boils down the thing. So I'm looking at it like, are we already, even though we're in the one class, one sector, are we at the top of that class? And we're not going to make it to class two? Or is it every civilization as they start, they develop new ways? Like, can you go from one class to another class? Or is it just you're stuck in that class as soon as you start out on the basis?
So you start out in one class. So everyone will start out with type one civilization. And as the civilization evolve, you go to type two, type three. So right now we are looking at Elon Musk, SpaceX, Jeff Bezos with... his rocket launch, Blue Origin the other day. Richard Branson with Virgin Galactic. So there's a new space race going on. So looking at Elon Musk that wants to go to Mars. So if we have a colony on Mars, then we become a stage two civilization or type two civilization. And that is something really interesting trend happening now that I found really interesting. Back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, the space race to get the first person in space, put the first person on the moon, was motivated by governments because there was a military thinking around it. So if you can put the first satellite in orbit, means you can put the first warhead in orbit. If you can put the first person in space, mean you can put the first soldier in space. Going to the moon, if you can put the first person on the moon, meaning you can put the first military base on the moon. So back in the 70s, when these sort of explorations and funding stopped, people realized, okay, it's very expensive to get there, so it's not worthwhile putting a military base on the moon. But now it's private industry that is leading the space race. So in the last couple of years, the Russians were open for it. If you want a private citizen, want to go to space, you pay the Russians, they put you in a Soyuz rocket and up you go. And Soyuz technology is very old, so the price per person is extremely expensive. The last time I checked, I think the Russians were asking around about $200 million to put one person in space. Now, all of a sudden, Elon Musk came in with these reusable rockets, and that price has now dropped to $19 million per person.
It's still a lot of money.
So the estimates is in the next year that $19 million will drop to $60 million. And then from there on, it will keep dropping. So the estimate is around about in the 2030s. That price will drop to between $100,000 and $200,000 per person.
Do you think in the next 10 years or so that it's going to be more likely that it's going to be better forms of transportation to go to these planets and say maybe 10? I can't say, because everyone's like, we're going to live on space, or we're going to live on a different planet in 50 years. Dude, that iPhone iPhone 1 came out like what, 11 years ago, and we're at the one that it's at now. So I'm like, hey man, like, we didn't know about in 2000, everyone thought the world was going to end. So it's like, we've made amazing strides where I'm like, I can't say 50 years we're going to be living on a planet. It might be way sooner than that. But people go, why would you want to? I'm in this boat as well, too. Why would you want to live on another planet? I like this planet that I live in. I go, yeah, but there are some people that are going to want to live on another planet, and then they're going to have kids. And then when you're born on that planet, you don't know anything different than that planet. So then you're not going to care about Earth. And then eventually it's just going to get generations upon generations where Earth's going to be like a basic planet. There's probably not going to be a whole lot of people here. It's probably going to start being taken over with forestation growth. But if we could develop an iPhone because we want to communicate with each other, how long until someone develops, instead of needing to put a helmet on, they make oxygen tablets that slowly release oxygen throughout your blood so you can walk around space without a helmet?
That is one of the coolest things about science and technology, is everything is happening at such a tremendous space, we don't know exactly where we're going to end up. So for technology, we go by Moore's Law. I don't know if you are familiar with Moore's Law.
I've heard of it, but I'm not.
So sure. Moore's Law, according to me, that law should be revised. But Moore's Law says every 24 months, your processing power on technology will double and the physical size will become smaller. But now if you go back, say, 10 to 15 years, taking cell phones as an example, that actually worked because every year or every 2 years a new cell phone will become released on the market. But now if you look at iPhone, that's now releases twice a year. So it is usually a full release, and somewhere in the year will also be a release. So that has now shrunken to about 6 months. So if you look at your phones, tablets, computers, around about every 6 months, the processing power doubles and the physical size becomes smaller. So looking at Moore's Law, in the next couple of years, we will see tremendous increase in technology, especially the power we have in technology. And that's why I came across a saying of Neil deGrasse Tyson that says it's actually the era we live in is probably the worst, because we are 100 years too late to explore the Earth and born probably 100 years too early to explore space.
Yeah, it seems like our hopes and dreams or whatever for space colonization, I mean, it's been talked about. There's old projects, government plans that have been drawn up with giant domes on the moon talking about this. And then it's like now those are getting dusted off and like, hey, this could be a possibility. And I look at like, we've kind of destroyed the one that we're on, which has been like everyone's saying, well, it's because we need to find another planet to live on because Earth won't be around much longer. I was like, no, Earth's going to be around way longer than the human species is going to be around. If going to go through some climate shift that just wipes us out, and then it'll rejuvenate and then it'll restart all over again. But that the space thing, man, my only hope right now is that everything right now is focused on the pandemic. Everything is focused on, you know, political stuff, or everything's focused on mask. I'm like, the UAP stuff, I want to focus in on that for everybody, because that's a glimmer of hope that we don't have to fight, and we can have this curiosity about us that is about space, is about, and I'd rather explore the oceans, but I'm not going to be mad at people that want to go explore space, because it is fascinating. There's amazing sites out there, but we still can't get over the fact that the Earth is flat. Like, there are people out there that believe that's to a T, man. I have friends that are like that, and I'm like, why? And it's all a factor of, when we talked about in the beginning about all this information that's slowly being trickled to us, when you constrict the flow of information, or you say you publish something that's wrong and say this is 100% fact, and then it ends up being exposed wrong later, you have to keep an open mind with things, because the reason why flat earthers think that the Earth is flat is because the old NASA photos of the Earth, they were CGI'd a little bit because they added some clouds and stuff to make it appealing to put on a poster. And now people go, well, you've lied to me once. Why wouldn't I expect you to lie to me again? And it's like, damn it, they're not wrong. That's the issue, is that we need, if you've discovered extraterrestrial life, you need to be honest with it. If you haven't, be honest with it. But when you sit there and you don't show people, you redact articles, you do whatever, this whole entire thing that we do whenever information gets released, you're leaving this crack in the door for conspiracies or issues or people that are going to hunt you down to find out what the truth is. And it just becomes an even more divided society. And we're never going, I think, with space, for instance, the only appealing factor is not just living on a new planet, but you want to be the first one on that planet. When I see Bezos go up there, when I see Elon go up there, I was like, if you're going to create the very first thing on that planet, then everyone has to come to you that shows up on the planet. And now you're the toll booth of, I'm going to give you these materials to help you get a jump start onto your thing. You're basically like the president of that planet if you're the first one on there.
That's something interesting because I see there's a lot of now discussions at two points, interesting points. One is, so for example, Elon goes sets up his colony on Mars. So the first question is, now who controls Mars? Does Elon Musk and SpaceX control Mars? Does the US control Mars because it's a US company? Or does Earth as a whole control Mars? So there's interesting debates going on in scientific and political circles that's now arguing for a United Earth flag to be placed on Mars and not, for example, a SpaceX flag or a US flag. But something else people don't really talk about, and that's something that a lot of people misses, and it's something that is going to happen in the near future, is asteroid mining. Because there's a big asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. And some of those asteroids contains a lot of precious resources, such as gold, copper, nickel, silver, iron. So a lot of the big mining companies around the world are now setting up think tanks and research departments to see how can you get to one of those asteroids and mine it, or rather, how can you catch an asteroid and bring it back to Earth so we can mine it here?
It's fucking Armageddon. That's the movie plotline. What are we talking about? Oh my God. It's crazy because so the United World flag, for instance, it makes sense because if you're going to a new planet, back when people go, well, our civilizations, nobody tried to, and like, we're still doing that now. We're trying to capture each other and we're trying to claim territory. But now think about, we have the mentality or the mindset of knowing that we can do this type of thing. And now we get to start off at scratch one on a new planet. 1,000 years ago, a couple hundred years ago, when America was being created a couple hundred years ago, we didn't think about trying to expand out our land, not trying to go over across seas and make these giant voyages and bring armies and fly planes over there to be able to do so. Our technology has now enhanced our perspective. So now if we go to another planet, that generation that's going to be on there, that's a civilization too. That means you now have the knowledge. And it's like if you were 90 years old and I said, I'm going to bring you back to age 10 with all the wisdom you have now. You're now way ahead of where you should be because you've had already a whole experience in front of you.
I agree. I don't know if you watched the show The Expanse. Sci-fi show, brilliant. But the short of it is our solar system has been colonized. So Earth is now controlled by one government formed or controlled by United Nations. Then there's a colony on Mars. And then in the asteroid belt, there is a mining colony that lives on the asteroids and mine the asteroids. So what happened is Mars broke away from the UN and they formed their own Martian government. And the Martians are now, it's basically humans that live on Mars, but they call themselves Martians, but Martians now in war with Earth. And then the asteroid belt is there and they can't choose sides because they have to provide resources to both Earth and Mars. So it's a really cool sci-fi series to watch.
What is your prediction, let's say in the next 5 years? Let's start with this then. In the past almost two years since we last talked, what in your mind has changed?
So I've gotten a bigger, more perspective of, so for me to change, the change I saw is a lot of people now is working together. So different countries are pulling in resources together to work for the same goal. So my predictions is short year for the mayor in short term, for say 5 to 10 years, there will be a colony on the moon, but not necessarily a colony, it could be a small research base, or like we have a research base in Antarctica, something like that. So we have people up in the International Space Station, but we can have a couple of people on the moon doing research, operating a research base there. Then from there on, we will have a first colony on Mars. So if you do the math, most of your energy to get somewhere in space, if you go to the moon or if you want to go to Mars, most of the energy you use is to escape Earth's gravitational pull. But if you escape the gravitational pull, you use a lot less energy going to the moon or to Mars. So the idea is that you can put another space station in orbit around Earth. That's your refueling station. Or you put a refueling station on the moon. So you use most of your energy to get up to orbit away from Earth. You go to your refueling station. And then from there on, you go to wherever you want to be. And I see that happening in the next 15 years.
Do you think we'll develop a better method, much like we have Amazon drones to be able to do stuff for us now? Do you think we'll have a better method of delivering resources instead of just sending people up there to go carry these supplies? We can just send a drone or something to be able to send down some supplies to people that are on this planet to help build the colony?
Yes, that will most likely happen. So for example, let's use Mars as an example. So the first people on Mars will kind of be stranded there because they don't have the resources to get back to Earth. So if they need to get back to Earth, you need to build your own rocket on Mars and create your own fuel for the rocket on Mars. So then you will need some sort of a drone, so a rocket that you can just send to Mars, it lands itself, and then you can unload the resources you need. Until you have your colony or research base up and running on Mars, then you can start building your own launch system to get stuff back to Earth again. And once you have that up and running, then you can automate the system completely. So you can send up a drone rocket, if you want to call it that, goes to Mars, it offloads stuff, and then you can put from Mars stuff onto the same drone rocket, and it brings it back to Earth.
Yeah, I do look at if we do end up going into space and it becomes like a normal thing, like taking an Uber, you can do that with space now. I look at it like some of these planets that aren't as appealing, like there's going to be a brochure where it's like, do you want to go to the moon for $1 million or would you like to go to Mars for $3 million? It's like some of these places that aren't really seen as like, you know, Mars is a little bit more interesting because it's larger. Which is like, I just looked at Elon for when he was saying, let's go to Mars. I was like, you just want to go on your own thing that nobody's done yet. That's all you want to do. You don't care about, you could easily colonize on the moon. He could, but he's like, no, I want to go to Mars. It's like, we haven't even, okay, that makes perfect sense, but whatever, build your hotel there. But if there's going to be a brochure and eventually the moon is going to be like a transport station where people meet, they get fuel, and then they get maybe some resources for their next voyage onto their actual destination. It's kind of like a layover. Like you have that one first stop, and then you finally get to your vacation spot after that one.
That's going to happen. But the one thing that's going to happen before that is, and I saw international community, especially NASA, seems like NASA was against it, but is actually now considering it. There was a proposal from a Chinese billionaire. Why don't you add a hotel section to the International Space Station? Because the space station is created that you can create different modules. You send up the module, hook it up to the space station, and you can expand the space station. So there's now a proposal. Why don't you add a hotel section to the International Space Station that can cater for 2 or 3 guests at a time? And it's estimated for the last figures I saw for a night stay would probably be around about $1.5 million. But there's actually people that will do it. There's actually people that will say, oh, I want to go up to the space station for a week or a couple of days.
This is where I'm nervous is if you build a colony on the moon and you haven't mastered oxygen tablets or whatever new way to breathe, you're still living in like a dome. How long until like you get somebody that goes up there and they have a mental snap where they're like, I need to get out now. And then they just explode the dome and then the whole entire thing is done. I'm like, you don't want to let people onto the International Space Station because of a concept of these are people that are, they might be living up there. They might have gotten used to like a routine or whatever, but then they're going to have random strangers walking around. It's like if I let a group of people into your classroom that you've never seen just to observe you. You might still teach, but you're going to be like, there's people, I better not slip up. There's people watching me right now. And then you're going to be more focused on them than actually making sure that your students are getting the information that they need.
That's actually a very interesting point. And also brings me to the interview I listened to the other day on Neil deGrasse Tyson's podcast, Star Talk. On the Hawaiian Islands, because I think the mountain is Mianu Keys, it's especially high in altitude. So NASA has constructed a biodome there and put people in it to see what will be the long-term effects of being close proximity with other people. So if you want to leave the dome, then you need to put on your spacesuit and then you can do whatever you need to do outside. If you come back, you need to take off your spacesuit. So just to see what will be the psychological effects on people living inside a dome, even in close proximity to each other for 6 months to even a year. And what I have found is the people inside the dome living together, they will have their arguments and they will, certain types of personalities will clash with one another. So your process of finding candidates who make sure their personalities and profiles match, and then you can sort out a few of those problems. But what they found is, because now they have to simulate a mission control that is back home as well, that gives them commands and orders and tasks to do. Then they started realizing the people in a dome is actually fighting with mission control. Then they started getting mad and said, oh, but stupid mission control asked me to do this again. And oh, stupid mission control has asked me to do that again. So to solve that problem is they found that every couple of weeks, they change out the mission control crew and put in a new crew. And then that conflict is mitigated. But it's really interesting is the psychological constraints and the psychological, I want to say, difficulties need to go through for living on colonies and living in space. So imagine six people living in a dome together for 6 to 12 months. Surely you will get irritated with someone. Surely you will get mad at someone. So that is something also that needs to be investigated for these space explorations that's coming up.
I feel like you need to have separate domes for separate personalities. You're not going to have a Democrat and a Republican in the same exact dome, you know, even though it's just a political party. And this is a little bit bigger than that, obviously. But people want to fight over the smallest things. And I'm like, first, we need to control not only our nation, but the world in a whole. We need to find a globalization before we even explore out into starting another colony. We don't even have this one in check yet. You know, that's what I said about the UAP topic, about all that stuff. Who's to say that they've came here? Maybe they're waiting for us on another planet where they can individually talk to someone. If you're trying to prove that there's no flat Earth, you have to take individual flat earthers and show them, hey, the Earth's not flat, by taking them up into space and showing them. That's going to take a lot of time. So maybe that's their strategy. Maybe they don't age as much as we do. I'm just being hypothetical, obviously, but you have a bunch of people colonizing on the moon and then you meet them there like, hey, we exist. We haven't came to your planet because your fucking armies would attack us. All this type of stuff would go on. You guys want to control. You guys want to do all these things. This is more of a one-on-one, much like how this Zoom call with me and you is. You could be speaking to a whole class right now, and it might be the same information you're telling me, but I'm not going to soak it in as I'm soaking it in right now, because you're giving me one-on-one individual time that's helping me process and understand more and more and more. And that's kind of what we need. These giant broadcasts, these giant televisions, these documents, these reports, these news articles that we see, they're not giving people individual one-on-one time. They're hitting a broad spectrum of a globe, and they have certain sensors that they got to make sure they abide by so they don't piss certain people off. And that's when information gets misled. That's when disinformation starts. That's how QAnon starts. That's how all these things start. And I'm like, you need to make this type of information more accessible to the people that want to look into it. Freedom of Information, or FOIA.gov. I've spent now past couple of weeks just scrolling through all their documents. First, I did the dumb stuff. I typed in JFK and then I typed in 9/11 because I wanted to see all the articles on that shit. But then when I type in like the Wuhan lab, the UAP stuff, you help educate yourself a little bit more that this is not like some of these aren't theories. Some of these aren't ideas. There's articles about it. People have talked about it, but you need to look up the information for yourself. And hopefully with the UAP stuff, I've talked to a list of people from this girl. Her name's Kelly Dodge. She does videos on this type of stuff. She follows like Jeremy Corbell and all this. And me and her talked about, and even my friend, astrophysicist friend, Dr. Serene Nemi, she thinks that there's definitely extraterrestrial life out there. But why is it all the information isn't being let into us? Why is there only 9 pages of a report when Australia releases like 1200 or 1700? You start to look at when you restrict the flow of information, you're only damaging future progress. It's going to take us a lot longer now to be able to get on the same page to colonize on another planet. The idea is, if you're open and honest with anything, as horrible as it might be, it's going to, the short-term effects might be bad, but the long-term is way, way smaller compared to lying and keeping it going on for years and years and years. You're now wasting progress and you're wasting time on that aspect. And I look at it like, I hope there's aliens. I really do. But I don't see, just like how Neil deGrasse Tyson says, I don't see their interest in us right now. We are pretty interesting as people, but it's, if I'm looking at two pit bulls or two dogs fighting, I'm going to be like, I'm not getting in that shit. You know what I mean? It just makes sense.
Now, I totally agree with you. And freedom of speech and freedom of information is really important. Certain stuff where you keep some information secret, that I can understand. For example, in a military aspect, if you know certain people will be in danger or you have a certain plan to attack someone, that I can understand if you have a bit of secrecy to it. But general information, does aliens exist? Have we encountered it? Yes, no. That should be publicly available with no restrictions on it. Even go taking the Ariana Trench, deepest part of the ocean. What happening there? Keep that information open to everyone. So everyone can learn from it.
Yeah, what's the bloop? That random noise that just happens that nobody can explain.
Yes. So exactly. So for me, I'm open to keeping stuff free information. So that's also why in the science world, most scientists prefer to use open source software because it's free. You can make the changes you want to, and then in return, you can support someone or someone can support you to improve on a software. And you can take that same principle and apply it to information. So let's say you have discovered something and you publish a work on it. And then someone else might say, ah, but I've also encountered that, but I have learned this from it that you haven't learned from it. So let's put our notes together and see if we can understand the thing a lot better. And that's how I see things should happen. But unfortunately, due to political interference and a few other stuff, that doesn't happen.
Well, I think with people, for instance, we're all information, obviously, but I think we're better together than we are apart. And I know that's probably been said multiple times in multiple different ways, but I learned this when I was talking to an anthropologist, and then I had someone who studies Indian studies. Now, those two are never going to be able to be in a room together without them, somebody pulling out a knife and stabbing each other. Because with the anthropologists, they go, you got to think in the mindset of what it was back in the day and that realize, yeah, it was horrible what they did, but look how we've evolved and we don't think like that anymore. They don't see, like a lot of people go, Christopher Columbus, and he has his own day. He's a terrible person. I'm like, yeah, but that's the mindset of them. That's not rationalizing what they did, but that's, you got to understand their train of thought, their thinking was way different than where we're at now. You know, even 5 years ago, Tropic Thunder, they did blackface. You're not doing that anymore. That's a short amount of time. We don't think like that. We look at that like a horrible thing now. So I'm like, understand that things age and we evolve and we learn past that. And we can't hold people of the future for things that happened in the past. Now with the Indian studies, they have a side too. They talk about, no, because we need to give their land back. We need to do all this stuff. I understand, because now you've researched so specific on this one side that you understand their experience, but you're not... Is it possible that both of your information, an anthropologist and Indian studies, can come together and share their resources and realize everyone was just trying to survive? People don't want to look into the lab things thinking it was a biological warfare tactic. I was like, we've done it. Everyone's done it. The biggest fear in everybody's country, whatever, in their mind right now is that somebody is doing something So we need to do the same thing to make sure if it does happen, we can be ahead of them. That's with space. We found out the Russians were going into space. Well, we need to get to space first. It's how this whole entire thing works. And a lot of times these people aren't even looking into something like that. They're like, well, America's doing that. Why are they doing that? Well, they think we're doing it. Well, we might as well start doing it. And then it becomes true. You start to realize, like, instead of being so divided because everybody wants to be number one, it's a nation. It's a flag. It's a where you're born. It's not your species. And what your species is human, hopefully. So besides all the reptile videos people talk about, which I've posted a couple of, I'm like, bruh, they CGI the news reporter's eyes to get the bags out from under them. And when they blink, they get anime eyes. And I'm like, no wonder people think there's reptiles on the news. Like, like they blink and their eyes look completely different. They're all popped out of their head like a chameleon. I'm like, whoa. And they blink sideways too, which is strange. But there's countless videos of it. And I go, when you realize that there's something bigger than gender, there's something bigger than ethnicity, there's something that we all share. And it's not the sun. It's not the moon. It's the fact that we are all part of the same species. We are all trying our best to progress in which way we think. Now, it's possible to, and I'm not going to lie, the last time we talked, I did not think this way. I thought I was open-minded as much as I thought I was. And now I realize where I'm at now after all the perspectives I've got drilled into my head from the people I've talked to. I was so short-minded in so many different ways that I think you need to talk to people. I think there's a benefit to community aspect of things. And I think the fact that we are so closed off and we choose to stick with people that are in our groups, our cliques that agree with us, I want you to disagree with me. If you tell me the earth is round, I'm going to fight the side of why the earth is flat. Not that I believe it, but that their perspective helps bring everything whole, no pun intended, but helps us find the idea of why they think this way. Why are people religious? I don't know, but I have to understand their perspective to truly see through your eyes as much as I possibly can, because that's where the growth is going to happen. I hope we get into space. I know people that have problems with Elon Musk, which being an astronomer, for instance, he does send a lot of shit up there where it's like, you're just making it harder for us to be able to, you know, but I've read his documentary. He had 5 or 6 kids. People go, we've only seen 5. Well, he lost a kid and then at 10 weeks, and then he threw himself into his work, and that's when his company started taking off and he started doing all these crazy investments. So I'm like, this is a person that's hurt. No wonder he wants to leave this planet. He's miserable. But you have to understand that perspective. As much as I might hate something, I have to see that perspective to truly understand, oh shit, we're similar. You know, as much as we are different, the differences is what brings us together. And that's like the main important thing that we need to focus on. And I'm not trying to be preachy. I'm just saying, you expect us to get into space. We can't even stop destroying ourselves here. It's going to happen over there. You're just changing the terrain.
I completely agree with you. So it's not human against human or different country against country. We are the same species. So to understand what's happening around the different pockets of civilizations across the globe or different countries, we are the same species. Is you're right, you have to be open-minded and put yourself in their shoes, look through their eyes to understand why are they doing certain things in certain ways, why do they believe things in certain ways. And as soon as more people will get open-minded, then the civilization will jump to a complete new level, because now everyone is understanding one another, understand what's happening, understand why certain people are doing things. And then we can start putting in generalized goals for us as a human species. What will be our next goal? What do we want to achieve next? And as soon as people start to unite with an open-minded inset to everything, then most of the problems around the world will be solved. And it's like you said, we don't want to preach to anyone or fight against someone or tell them you're stupid for believing that, but rather try to understand why do they believe it and why are they doing things. Then things will become a lot better. And the ideal situation, what I personally would love to see happening, is like we have a Star Trek universe. So everybody on Earth is united. It's not country X against country Y. It is Earth. We are a united Earth, and we are doing things to improve Earth and to improve the human race And that is what I'd like to see. And one thing since we last time I've spoke, I've realized about people is especially older generations is how closed-minded they are to certain things and how closed-minded people are against change.
I think that's a factor of just the way technology has opened up the barriers or the doors of things that we necessarily, I don't know if we were ready to learn a lot about our government. But when you really start looking, like people go, I can't believe like the Afghanistan thing that's happening right now. They're like, the president turned on us. All this type of stuff happened. And now we're you know, all this stuff's happening. I'm like, it's happened before. But when you really like there are devices, you can look through anything on government websites or anything, any article, you can just type it in. There's been a project on it. Bill Gates tried to launch a missile at our atmosphere to dissipate particles to dim the sun. And people said, no, don't do that. Because he had greater things ahead, but he didn't realize how much of a supervillain he was coming off to be when you talk about that type of stuff. But I look at it like this. You can type in any random thing you think this couldn't exist in a million years. It's happened before. And our older generations didn't have the availability to check if their government was doing Bohemian Grove, you know, if they were doing all these crazy things that were happening. I don't know if you know what Bohemian Grove is.
Not really. If you can, what is the short and sweet of it?
Basically giant heads of state, governors. You know, the Epstein thing, that whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of governors and people like this that are heads of our Congress and in our like giant political positions in government that are seen in a video that Alex Jones exposed. So he gets a lot right. Like he talked about growing human organs inside of a monkey. NPR released that almost a month ago, that they actually have been able to develop human organs in a monkey to be able to extract it and give you a new organ. So he was right about that. He was right about a bunch of stuff. But he took a video of a bunch of governors and politicians that were praying in front of a giant owl statue and burning a giant statue of a straw man. And that's Bohemian Grove. And people didn't think this existed. I told my grandparents that. I told my parents that. They go, that sounds crazy. Then I show them the video. You're like, they're like, is this Photoshop? I'm like, no, this came out in like 2010, but information now, this is why future generations and kids of my generation, kids younger, they're able to find this stuff easier than older generations were. So now they're like, I'm not ruling anything out, but then they stick to something that they can control, which is trying to cancel somebody or fight somebody when necessarily they don't have the whole perspective in view. They have what they think is enough. And that's kind of the main point here is that like, what you think you know right now is not even close to the start. There's going to be way more that you're going to learn. And I think the reason why I get along with a lot of people that are involved with space is because you have seen literally how small we are in the grand scale of things. And a lot of people, their car payment, their electric payment, they're all these things that they, yeah, you should focus on. But that is everything that is consuming their life to the point where they want to end it. And they got to realize like what keeps me humble when my ego gets too big is I sit in my driveway at night and I look up at the stars and the ones that I can see through all the pollution, I look at it like, why are my problems consuming me so much when I'm this tiny, not even a speck of sand in the giant beach that is this whole entire world, that is this universe, that is this. And it really brings your problems to a smaller point of like, I'm getting really upset. And it doesn't mean anything in the grand scale of things.
No, I totally agree with you. So we are actually a tiny, tiny speck in the universe. So looking what's going on is one person as a individual, your problems and everything doesn't make a difference in the grand scheme of things. But you can ground yourself through that process. If you feel overwhelmed, if you look up in the night sky, that's one way to ground yourself. And space is also a good way to open up your mind to a few things. So if you look up to space, and if you ask someone, what is the first thing you think about by looking into space? Most people say, oh, it's so beautiful. For example, one thing that I do is I call it sidewalk astronomy, is where you go to a mall or shopping center or somewhere and you set up a few telescopes in the parking lot. And then if someone walks past and you say, have you seen Saturn through a telescope? And usually when I see Saturn with the rings around it, they say, wow, this is really beautiful. But then that usually opens up a totally new, different conversation to someone, where people say, is that actually true? Do you have something in front of the lens? Say, no, you say this is actually Saturn. And then people ask and say, but what else can you see through the telescope? And then then the questions pop up. So what else is out there? What else is happening in space? And then people are actually putting stuff together, sort of realizing, wow, we are actually small, and that's why certain people are exploring space. And usually something I tell my students is, why do we as humans do astronomy? What do we get out of astronomy? So the sweet and short is, we basically, for the average person around the world, doesn't get anything out of astronomy. But there's two things we get out of it. The first thing is, astronomy helps with technologically advancing us as human beings, because most of the technology we develop for astronomy in a couple of years ends up in the hands of average people. That's why each of us have a cell phone, because cell phones originated from technology being created for the Apollo missions to the moon. And then the second point is, we as humans are a curious species. We want to know things. You can ask anyone around the world. They are curious about something. They have interest in something. They can be curious for what's going on in space, curious of what's going down in the oceans, curious what's happening in the Amazon rainforest. So we as humans are a curious species. We want to know what's out there. We want to know what makes something tick, how something works, how things operate. And that is what sets us apart from other species on the planet, is our way of thinking, the way of we can ask deeper questions in life. Ask, for example, what is out there?
You think we limit our capabilities of what we can do because we choose to look through such objects that are on this planet rather than look at things that we can actually put our effort into to really accomplish?
Yes. So, for example, if you can just spark the curiosity of one kid in some way, that kid might be thinking a whole way differently about something, and that kid will have the possibility of perhaps to change the world in some way.
Kind of like every small act you do has a giant change. You just got to see what that's going to be.
Yes. And one way you can reach a lot of people at the same time is through astronomy.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, I'm very appreciative of you coming back on the podcast for sure. And I think it's going to help a lot of people out there that are, this is a curious subject for a lot of people. I mean, out of all my episodes, it's always a space episode that gets a little bit more views than the others, because everyone has this capacity to want to understand what's out there, because what we see is just the face value of what space is this limit or this endless thing. But we don't really see all the other stuff without going to a documentary. And even then, it's very focused in. It's not answering all of their questions. When you can sit there and listen to people talk about it, experiences, interviews, Neil deGrasse Tyson, as much as he like skips over the main question, I think it's on everybody's mind of the alien topic, it's still like, that gives me hope that people can, I mean, we're going to truly unite over something when we realize we're not the only thing out here. Right now, we just think we're the top dog, so there's no reason to try and search for another one. But if something comes and attacks us and it's bigger than all of us, then that's going to unite us. Or if something shows itself and chooses to help us evolve, it's something that's going to unite us. I think the issue right now is that there's nothing going on. There's wars for sure. The Afghanistan thing that's going on right now, I see that happening for a while. That's going to be on everybody's mind. But the idea of world peace is never going to happen. And you necessarily don't want it, because people are going to find conflict in smaller things. If you're not battling a foreign enemy, if you're not tackling some giant challenge, you spark up animosity with small things that necessarily might not even have a problem. It's like sitting in your house and you're in your kitchen. You're like, man, there's nothing, no house repairs I got to do. I finished it all. And then you hear the refrigerator humming and you're like, I got to fix that refrigerator hum. And then you just start hitting it with a hammer. Next thing you know, it's even louder and louder and louder. And then the refrigerator breaks. Now you got to buy a new refrigerator. You look for a problem, even though there necessarily might not even be one there. And that's kind of like why we need to have this progression of space, why we need to have this giant leaps or this giant innovations in technology. Everyone needs to be striving for something. You need a goal, because when you don't have a goal, you're just, if we feel like we're lost.
Yes, I completely agree with you. And that's actually just popped up in my mind. And that's also an interesting trend that happened in the last 60 to 80 years. So if you look back to the past, your scientists were seen as basically as rock stars. You look at Sir Isaac Newton and a few other people. But somewhere in the last 60 to 80 years, someone's or people's mindset has changed. So the last scientist that basically had rock star status was Albert Einstein. So somewhere in the 50s, he went from the US to the UK and he traveled via boat. So in the UK, when he arrived at a port, 80,000 people waited for him to greet him at a port, because he is Albert Einstein. But now, look at where we are now. If you put a famous scientist, for example, let's use Professor Brian Greene or Brian Cox. They are from, let's use Brian Cox, he's from CERN, so the Large Hadron Collider and Particle Accelerator. Put him on a plane, fly him somewhere. A couple of people might recognize him, because he also has his own, he appears on a few BBC shows and he also appears on a few podcasts, but not many people will recognize him. So the mindset is, what has happened in the last, let's say, 80 years for people's mind shifts to change? And the physicist Brian Greene made the statement that said, as soon as people look up to scientists and engineers the way they look up to celebrities and pop stars, then civilization will jump to a new level.
It's very strange that we look at scientists in a different light. TikTok stars are more popular than a scientist is. You know, there's a lot of famous scientists out there that I follow on Instagram. They have like 10,000, 15,000 followers. That's a good amount, sure. But a TikTok star that just shows, or in person on OnlyFans, gets 9 million. And it's like, man, our priorities as people have definitely changed.
So that's an interesting mindset that happened also in the last 8 years. I don't know what changed the mindset of people. I don't know what caused it, but that's an interesting trend I saw. And something also interesting the last couple of years, especially if say the last 2-3 years, I've also noticed is how ignorant people has become all of a sudden. So rather people would rather trust some random guy that posted a Facebook video than some person that has been involved in a study for 12 to 15 years and they publicly made the data available, but rather some random person on Facebook.
Oh, dude, you're telling me, man. I see so many people that like information will come out on a news thing and they'll retweet it. And then like, as soon as they backtrack or they have to make a retraction or something, and then you retweet it, they go, well, I don't trust them. I'm like, well, you just looked to them because they fit your opinion a minute ago. And now you're against them because it doesn't fit your opinion. It's like people are just at this point, you're supposed to sort through information to be able to find out the truth and be able to find out so you can enhance your own perspective. Now it's, if it doesn't fit my opinion, I don't need to learn about it. And then you toss it out your thing. And I'm like, that's completely hindering yourself as a person. I mean, we see it best with the mass stuff. They retracted a bunch of mass stuff and now they're bringing it back. And it's like people are either for it or they're against it. And I'm like, this is the issue of like, we're very, very divided as people. I'm hoping in the next couple of years or next 10 years, we can be able to handle that a little bit better. But I don't see any light in the end of the tunnel at this moment.
Now, I totally agree with you. And the idea is how I see it is, if you don't agree with something, you don't have to agree with it, but that is the facts, that is the data. So the data is supposed to change your mind or convince you otherwise, not the other way around. Your feelings and emotions is not supposed to change the data.
I just want to get to that place where I can sit with someone and just have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in like one of the most amazing natural places of all time and just talk, even if they don't agree with me. Like, I just want to sit, talk, and see what happens.
Now, I agree. And that's one of the funnest ways to learn a person and also to figure out what makes a person tick. And unfortunately, I don't see that happening now in the last couple of years, because people are, it doesn't fit their opinion, it doesn't fit what they believe, then they just toss it out.
It's kind of interesting because you mentioned about nations working together to help like advance technology. And I'm like, I see that. But then I also see the perspective of like, it's only because you only ask somebody for help or something when you need something. You only help somebody when you can get something out of it. And that's kind of what the world has been running on for a long time. Now, throughout doing this podcast, I'll get a random message like, hey, man, I know I haven't liked any of your posts or haven't talked to you in a while, but I'd love to come back on the show. It's like, what? You don't give a shit. You just want the platform. And it's like you start to realize that like people will either use you for something. There's a way to change that. There is a way to make sure that people generally care. And I think that just comes from an understanding of what a person is experiencing, being more connected into the lives of the people around us. That's not saying you have to go greet your neighbor every single time, but holding a door open for somebody to realize, okay, I hold this door open for something, is a trickle effect. Next thing you know, they pay for something of yours. I've heard many stories of that happening. It's all in an aspect of the world is not that dark. It's pretty bright. But it shouldn't be that hard to try and find the good in it, you know, especially if you're on Twitter like I am. All I see is just constantly people just fighting each other. And I'm just like, oh, man, like you guys are basically saying the same thing, but you guys won't get down from your little pedestal for a second to understand each other. I mean, I follow cult people, follow anti-cult people, follow flat earthers, not flat earthers.
Oh, yes.
They say the same stuff, but if they just put the effort that they have into what they want to fight against to something bigger, you'd get so much shit done. Like, it's ridiculous.
Now, I totally agree, because I'm really active on Facebook, because there's a lot of astronomy Facebook groups and astrophysics Facebook groups. That's really interesting. And I don't know why. So you can share something really interesting. Interesting article, interesting find, then there will always be someone that completely ignores the post and will start rambling and fighting on either political views or even religious views on the topic that you just shared.
I don't know. How are we going to get, can we just ban, maybe if we ban Facebook, ban Twitter, ban Instagram, it's going to be harder for us to communicate, but maybe we'll actually do in-person stuff. Cause half the time you see somebody post or fight on Facebook or one of these platforms, they don't say it in person to somebody. And that's how you know they don't actually feel the way that they do.
Yes, I totally agree. So I saw a few of these groups are actually the admin created the house rule saying, no fighting, no discussions about X, no discussions about Y. And everywhere you will still find one person that for some reason gets through the lines and cracks and starts chaos on one of those groups.
Yeah, I mean, that's a strange one, because like there's a podcast support group and it's like, promote your stuff, share it. We're here to be a better community. Then anytime you post something that's of your podcast, they just delete it. So I ended up leaving the group after like a year in it. And it's because the guy, he just wants followers and he has this guy of promoting other people's podcasts and all this, but he only promotes his own and he only lets his own get shown into the group. So I'm like, you're now controlling this large group now that you have power. I actually followed a Simpsons fan page, like a cartoon animated, like fan of the Simpsons. And, you know, like he would post all these amazing things like factual stuff about the show and background scenes and all this. Then immediately I was following a page that said, kill Donald Trump or something like that. And I was like, I don't want anybody to die, no matter who you are. And then like I looked, it was the Simpsons page. They waited till they got a giant following with something that everybody loved. And they switched it to a political thing to fight that their thought and their perspective or their side. And I'm like, that's a dirty trick, man. That's a cheap way of getting a bunch of people following you. And then when your page gets large enough, you switch the whole direction of the page. Where I'm like, I don't know what goes through their minds, but some of these, I give them a golf clap. I'm like, you fucking crafty bastards. Like, holy crap.
I agree. I've seen that a couple of times as well. And you're right, that is a dirty trick of doing something. But that's one thing I love about podcasts. Since the last time we've spoken, I've started listening to more different kinds of podcasts. I'm a regular subscriber and listen to your podcast as well. And for me, is it by making use of podcasts, you can reach a large audience and provide them with interesting information. And hopefully the listeners or viewers will absorb that information, and hopefully that will create a little light bulb going on and say, aha, now I've learned something new, or aha, perhaps I should think or look at that situation or person or topic in a different way.
Oh, dude, I have my astrophysicist friend, Dr. Serene Nemi, on here, and she was telling me how, like, I had the flat earth questions I had to hit her with, and she was like, oh my God, Robbie. And I guess the sarcasm, since the language barrier, I guess she wasn't getting my sarcasm. I was like, I'm just joking. Obviously, I don't think the earth is flat. But then if you look up Flat Earth Dave, who's like a known, like, interviewed flat earth guy, his views in 2 days get like thousands of views. And then like the one about explaining the science behind it doesn't get anything. And I'm like, oh, like, here's how the world is. People love the fantasy thing, not the actual legit science to it.
Yes.
It's, I mean, I don't know how to fix that. I don't know how to get people more interested in it, but I think it's about making it fun and comedical. I think that's important about having people like you on my show as well, too, is because you're not speaking from a level that's higher up than where I'm at. You're talking to me like I'm a human being trying to understand, you know, and that's the most important thing that we can do, especially even not me, but educators. If you talk to someone from an even playing field, like, I might have a degree in this and we might be talking about this, but I'm not better than you. I'm a human being just like you, and we're going to learn, and I'm going to walk you through this together, and we can enhance our own perspectives. That's going to see way more growth than every single video you hear someone just laughing, going, I'm not even going to answer that. It's like, well, now you are dismissing and you're coming off like a bit of an asshole.
I totally agree. I had in my undergrad, I had a calculus lecture had made an interesting point and said, if someone asks you a question, or if you need to explain to someone, the best way to do it is you need to explain whatever you're doing to your little brother or sister that's now 5 years old. So if you can't explain it to a 5 years old, how can you explain it to a 30-year-old or 60-year-old? And that changed my way of communicating. So you have to make sure that your intended audience or even individual person you are talking to will understand or grasp what you are talking about. So it's a very interesting topic. No one is more important than another person. No one is smarter than another person. It just, everything comes down to how you can communicate with that person, how you can put information forward so that other person can understand you and say, okay, I understand you, and can formulate a great response. So saying something like, okay, I don't agree with you, and this is the reasons and facts why, without causing a big fight, or saying, ah, I didn't notice that, so now I know what I should do in the future, or now I've learned something else.
And I appreciate you for coming back onto the show and giving me a little bit of a lesson, as well as also, you know, having a conversation with me. Is there a place where people can find your links to be able to find any of your work, or if they have questions about something?
Yes, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So my handle is just my name in surname, so Heystick Grobler. So my name is H-E-Y. S-T-E-K, surname Grobler, G-R-O-B-L-E-R. So just use that as one word, and you will find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And do we have any final thoughts for the people listening?
So any of the final thoughts I have, I don't know, in today's rushing life and getting from point A, point B, getting stuff done, now to do this, just every once in a while, make a time, go outside, look up to the stars, and actually be amazed of what you can see from your own backyard.